Welcome to Brain-Based Parenting, the Boys Ranch podcast for families. We all know how hard being a parent is, and sometimes it feels like there are no good answers to the difficult questions families have when their kids are struggling. Our goal each week will be to try and answer some of those tough questions utilizing the knowledge, experience, and professional training Cal Farley's Boys Ranch has to offer. Now here is your host, Cal Farley Staff Development Coordinator, Joshua Sprock.
Welcome, everybody, and thank you for joining us today as we discuss teaching life skills to teenagers. To do that, today I'm joined by Rocky and Amy Lawless.
Hello.
Hello.
They work as house parents out here at Boys Ranch, and they have a long background of working with kids and teaching them life skills, and I think you'll really enjoy their input today. Also, I have Natalie Googe.
Hi there.
And Cole Smith,
hello,
who are facilitators of Transitional Living Program. All right, so each week we start out our discussion by asking our panel the question of the day. So are you guys ready for our insightful, deep-hitting question?
Let's do it.
Yes.
I knew you guys would be excited. All right, so today, since we're talking about life skills, what I'd like to know from you is, what would you say is your most impressive useless skill?
Well, I'll start. I can solve a Rubik's Cube. It felt like a really big accomplishment at the time and has never once served me in any setting since then.
It impresses people, though, I imagine.
Yes, and years ago when I could still do it, I'm sure it would have been impressive.
I feel like that when you're speaking of useless life skills, that really, if it helps a person grow in any way, then it becomes not useless. But yeah, spinning a basketball on your finger or making sure that you can do the walk the dog with a yo-yo, those become or can be useless life skills. So.
Well, those are so much better than mine. All I can do is fold clothes really tightly into carry-on bags and make them super heavy.
That is not useless.
And is that where the uselessness comes
in?
It is
in?
Well, it's the heaviness of it.
Because then you can't lift it. Yeah. So it is pretty useless.
It'd be a great skill if it wasn't so heavy, huh?
It would be a great skill if it weren't so heavy.
Okay, so Rocky, tell me my useless.
This feels like a trap.
Yes.
Don't answer that, Rocky.
Yeah.
All right.
I can't think.
Well, thank you, guys. So today our topic is life skills. So what exactly are we talking about when we do say life skills?
Well, I like to think of life skills as the kind of day-to-day skills and tasks you need to be able to do to navigate life as an adult.
I agree. I think life skills are the things that you have to be able to, you need to function in life. So social skills, communication skills, the necessities to get through life functionally.
And in the home, teaching kids when they first come, you know, for us, common sense is knowing how to use an alarm clock,
right?
And teaching these kids that had never even seen a digital clock or, you know, an alarm clock, and even teaching them how to work an alarm clock, you know, can be a life skill. You know, that's just something simple.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, that so often we assume that kids know how to do things, but unless someone's taken the time to kind of talk to them and show them, how would they know how to do it? So
exactly. It's so broad, too. I mean, there's so many life skills that need to be taught to kids. So.
Yeah, Rocky, I mean, it's everything from financial planning to personal hygiene, home hygiene. It's a whole lot of topics.
So as parents and caregivers, one of the main roles we have is to teach our kids life skills so that they can survive when they leave our care. But I'm guessing you teach different life skills at different ages. So for the sake of today's discussion, what life skills should caregivers be focused on for kids 14 years old and up?
For me, one of the things that we've learned specifically, you have to start with the relationship with these kids and build that first. And then you know what life skills are missing. Because, you know, we have one child in the house right now that there's no, I mean, we're going over basics,
mm-hmm.
like how to say a word, his grammar, you know, past tense, present tense. I mean, I'm back in fourth and fifth grade life skills with him, but then I know the other one down the hall doesn't need that same. So I'm not going to know. I can't just flat out say, okay, these are the life skills we're going to use today that we're going to learn today. It has to go individual by how you know that kid and that relationship and what they need. I mean, mm-hmm. For us, that's how it has to start.
I think you're so right. That relationship, we've talked about this in previous podcasts, how the relationship, you can't really do anything unless you've connected with the kid and really got to know where they're coming from.
I think part of the broader picture for us is that we really want to focus on the decision making, so critical thinking and problem solving, because having a foundation in that is what helps them follow into some of the things that they will do specifically in our TLP programs. So making those decisions for what will happen after graduation, whether that's going into the workforce or picking a college or a vocational training or even something as simple as getting their driver's license. So having a good foundation with those critical thinking and problem solving skills allows them to function in those areas.
Yeah, I think that's so key, because I'm guilty of this. My own kids, sometimes it's just easier for me to make the decisions and think for them. So in the short run, that's great for me. But in the long run, if I don't let them develop those things on their own and help them with that, then they're going to really struggle when they get out in the real world and I'm not there.
Right. And I think now that we live in kind of the information age, where kids 14 and up, and honestly even younger, have so much access to the internet and information online, that there's a lot of things that we used to consider life skills we need to teach them, but now we need to show them how to look up and solve problems. Mm. So, you know, things like sewing a button or some kind of basic car maintenance, are a lot of things, tying a tie, that used to we might teach in the home, but now it might be just as effective to give them the skills of how do you look up and where to find the answer to this problem. Can you find a video that shows you how to tie a tie? Mm-hmm. Can you watch a video that shows you how to change your tire, that teaches you how to sew a button back on your clothes? And so finding those resources and how to look them up online.
All right, let's start with a life skill that hopefully has been introduced before they become teens, but really needs to be reinforced throughout the teenage years. How do you help your teen develop proper manners and other interpersonal skills?
I believe this one's so important, especially for the kids that come to us at an older age that may have missed it, but they have to see it in us as well. So if you're trying to teach opening the door for a lady, then you don't just tell them to do it. They're like, what? You go do it. And then if they cross that path and go in before my wife or another lady, then you say, hey, hold on just a second. And then you explain that. So that goes back to that relationship as well. It helps you develop that relationship when you can pull them aside, not yell at them or anything in front of everybody else. Pull them aside and say, hey, here's just a basic life skill that maybe you need to know. We may not call it that at the time. We may just say, hey, I noticed that you walked in front of my wife when I had the door open for her, whatever that might look like, and pulling them aside and saying, hey, here's how we do this. So that is a good way to teach them, is by what we do. So,
and the kids look for, just a quick example, they look for what they get out of it. So if they do something, at least today, if they do something for somebody, they want something out of that for themselves, self-gratification or whatever. An example is having to do that. We were in town shopping and I noticed a kid doing that. And so I went inside and I explained to him that, you know, that wasn't appropriate. It was kind of rude for those people because you just stepped right in front of them. And so then as we were leaving the store, before we got to the door, I said, hey, there's somebody coming, go grab the door. He grabbed the door and it was, I think, an older couple. And as they came out, they turned and said, thank you so much.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, oh, I mean, you know, I had the example. See, that, I mean, that's not just because you need to do that. I mean, you're doing something for somebody else, you know, and you're looking past just you. And so for them seeing, you don't always get it, but having that opportunity that he actually saw the positive reinforcement of why that works, yeah. You know, and you don't always get that. So some, it's just the repeated, you know, but
it's so much about expanding their awareness.
Mm-hmm.
I think so many teens and some of us adults too, we're just so focused on ourselves. We don't see the rest of the world.
The tunnel vision.
Yeah.
Well, I think the repetition. So that's in our environment. That's what we do. We model the behavior that we want to see in our kids, or that's the idea. And we have a community where we have adults who are good examples. And so we model that behavior, whether it's picking up trash, holding doors, being good stewards of our financial resources, the buildings that we have, things of that nature, right? And so kids are always more aware of what we do than what we say.
Right.
And the repetition is what they see and what they learn from. And so if we continually show them that this is what's appropriate, what's acceptable, what's expected, then they absorb that. It's the same lesson from when you're 6 to when you're 16.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think also in teaching interpersonal skills, it's really helpful to be able to provide them a redo. I have so many kids or students who will come in and come at me with their emergency of something that needs to be fixed right away. And because they're stressed out and they're having a hard time, the way they ask isn't appropriate. It's rude. It's really heightened. And so giving them a chance to acknowledge their stress, acknowledge their frustration. And is there a way that you could come in and maybe be more successful with that request and giving them the chance to redo and come in with a calmer mind, knowing that I'm ready to help them. I just want to give them a chance to practice and redo appropriate interpersonal skills. And they're not always going to have those redos in the rest of life. Sometimes their inappropriate first responses will become the only chance they get. And so giving them lots of chances now, and this in a safer learning environment, parenting environment, teaching environment, is really important. So whenever they're out on their own and not going to get the second chance, that they've worked on what their first responses can be.
And it's really important too of how you approach that redo. You know, something as simple as, kid, hey, will you do such and such for me? And I went, yeah. And you just look at them and say, well, I don't think my name's Hay. You know, and so in my personality, and of course it's different for everybody, and then with that relationship again, is saying, is, you know, doing it in a fun type way, mm-hmm. but making him realize, you know, hey, do I ever call you Hey? I mean, do I ever call you Hey when I need you for something? Do I just yell across the house and say Hey? And, you know, so for my way of doing it, a lot of it's in a humor, lighthearted, mm-hmm. not just strong discipline, you know?
I think those playful redirections are just so key to getting, you know, you get the kids to do what you want, but you're not nagging on them.
Right, and they're not upset doing it.
So Natalie, I think you mentioned this earlier, but the next question I wanted to ask you guys is, how do you help teens develop critical thinking skills or problem solving skills? And why is that so important?
Well, like I mentioned before, it's repetition. It's having opportunities to meet them in the situations that they are. So in our program, we offer workshops and interactions, real world scenarios, or opportunities to have experiences where they will actually participate in once they leave high school or the safe environment that they're in now. And so we're meeting them where they are, and then hopefully providing them with a practice situation for where they will be. And so we're giving them an opportunity to use the skills that they're learning, and then helping them work on putting a safe plan in place. Mm-hmm. So they get to develop some of those critical thinking skills that they use with us in their homes, in school. So that's an opportunity. So that's one way.
Yeah.
And we're just reinforcing it while they're with us, while they're with teachers, with parents.
I agree with that. And we have a perfect example of that is we have a kid that just turned 18. He is able to sign himself out if he wants to, and actually just got back in touch with a grandmother. That is a beautiful situation. They love each other. The smiles that I saw when they were reunited was awesome. But instead of just saying, okay, yeah, you need to sign yourself out, I had him come and I said, let's look at the pros and cons of that. Okay, I want you to go to your room and I want you to list out these things that might be pros about leaving and cons about leaving. Pros about staying, cons about staying. Let's look at that and look at it real close. And here's some people that I want you to be in contact with. What school are you going to? What coach will you be under? And so he did all that and said, oh, wow, I'm staying here.
Awesome.
Just because he thought about it and wrote down some of those answers and said, wow, this, you know, what he thought was easy, just sign his name on a piece of paper so he could leave, now became, wow, I'm glad I did think about that. So it's very important that we teach those skills so that they do use them when they're out of care.
The cliche is that it takes a village, and
we
have a very healthy village. Though our kids do come to us from all backgrounds and opportunities of existence, we do have so many resources available to us, and so it's not just one or two people who are fighting the battle to get our kiddos ready for life after high school or life after placement. And so it's the Lawlesses. It's the Smiths, it's everyone, it's the Sprocks, it's everyone who participates in these kids' journeys. It doesn't really end at graduation because they're always available to use the resources of our organization,
right.
Fortunately. So I think that's one thing. We do our best as a community to get them ready and to teach them, you know, the simple things, the skills they need to function in an adult world. We're talking about independence, being able to take care of themselves independently. And success is defined in different ways. But really, we just want them to be able to handle functioning in the adult world, be able to go out and get a job, sustain a job, provide for the family that they create, right? Be happy, healthy, and provide. Those are the basics. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're trying to do here to get them to that place. It may not happen at graduation. It may not happen at college graduation if they go to college. It may take them an entire lifetime to get there.
So here's an area I think a lot of parents might be struggling with, because for many of us, this was not a thing when we were growing up. Can you guys talk to our families about how you would go about teaching proper digital citizenship?
I think it's so hard because so much of how our teen behave online is not something we always get to see. But giving them an understanding that for good or for bad, things that go online, things that go on the internet have a lasting impact, can almost always be found again if someone wants to find it. And so it's we were fortunate that in our teenage years, things weren't always being recorded for all of the mistakes and let's just say dumb things we did.
I know that's right.
But for them, it is, and how they communicate to someone online can be held against them later in life because it's still there. And so these things aren't just, they're not anonymous, they're not impersonal, they can stay with you. And so treating someone online the way you would treat someone in person is really key. And I think that is not the go-to anymore. I think the feeling of invincibility because mm-hmm. you're behind a phone screen or a computer screen has gotten too large. And so understanding that there's actually an increase in vulnerability, not invulnerability. It's more dangerous when you communicate inappropriately online than in person, because now there's a record of it.
Well, sometimes right now, what's difficult for our young people in the older age group, the adolescents, is they're having a hard time connecting that their digital footprint is lasting, and then what they're doing today will have a lasting effect on the choices that they may make in their future. So right now they're thinking, well, at some point I'll go to college and maybe I'll be a nurse one day, or maybe I'll get into, you know, communications or so forth, or whatever their dream is. But all the choices that they've made today, and maybe they have been a person who is cyberbullying or posting photos or comments, those don't go away. Mm. And there are companies who definitely check those out, and it will limit them from the opportunities they will have when they're 25, when they're 30. And there are several kids right now who just don't believe that. So they're having a hard time putting those two things together. And that's part of that critical thinking and realizing that our choices today have an effect on what we do tomorrow. And that's yeah. true with anything. But
yeah. I don't know if this is the exact same thing, but I see another part of it that has become a problem that we work with also, that we see, is the way they type. You know, when they're texting and the way they type, they abbreviate everything. And that is affecting their skill in being able to write something at school, to be able to write papers, because they cannot process full words. And so I see that a lot, just reminding them abbreviation. I said, you know, and how many times they ask you how to spell something because they don't have spell check when they're talking or when they're writing something. So that's another negative in that social media world, but it's also another one of those skills that we mm-hmm. have to work really, really, really hard on with them because of how it affects not just what we've talked about, but it affects their grammar, it affects school, you know, because of their writing and their processing a full word.
And as a community, that's our responsibility to mm-hmm. to be mindful and make sure that we are holding our young people accountable for their verbal, their behaviors, their etiquette, mm-hmm. that it's not appropriate to. That may be how you text with your friends, but that doesn't translate into how you communicate with adults, your teachers, your parents or other adults. And it certainly isn't appropriate for you to speak that way to anyone else. There is a difference. But if we as adults in their lives are okay with it, then they'll continue to do it because they model what they see. Mm-hmm. And so
It goes back to expanding their awareness. You notice something and talk to them about it. I mean, you don't have, like we talked about earlier, you don't have to come down hard on them, but expand that awareness. Allow them to see that there is something that could be different in how they do that. Here's an area I think that's really important to touch on due to the rising anxiety levels in our teens. Can you guys talk to our listeners about how they would help their teens build skills so that they can maintain and improve their mental health?
I think maybe one of the first steps is helping our teens connect that their mental health is connected to so many other choices in their life. Are they staying active, giving their body times to move and exercise? Are they fueling their body in a healthy way? All those kind of provide a good foundation for mental health to then be able to access and use skills like, you know, deep breathing, even communicating to trusted adults. If you're feeling tired and worn out, you may not take the step to get up and go talk to the people you need to talk to. And so the way you fuel and maintain some of your healthy life habits can be a big building block for your mental health.
I would just follow up on that. Cole makes an excellent point. Exercise, sleep, and having a supportive network, which our kids out here absolutely do.
Another thing in that is training them, you know, making wise choices in friendships, because that makes a big difference in just the atmosphere and that the mental health to me of, you know, each of the kids, and reminding them, you know, choosing the right friends and what that can cause, that stress level of, that's just one thing that I thought of in that.
Yeah, I think having those conversations about who you surround yourself with really does impact how you think, what you say, everything. And again, it goes back to, like you said, those relationships you have with the kids, building those so that they can have the ability to hear when we have those tough conversations with them. What about financial literacy? What would you recommend parents do to help their teens get on the right track when it comes to money?
Well, I think the first step might be to make sure that you also have some financial literacy as a parent. I think so many of us, maybe we don't even understand what all the percentages mean when we take out a loan for credit cards and car loans and mortgage payments. And if we lack that understanding of what all those numbers mean and how they affect everything, then it would be really hard to teach our teens about it. And then starting small, you know, if you start in with, this is what an APR means and a percentage, you've kind of overwhelmed them in their ability to hear what you're saying anymore. But you can start with small steps. This is how you save. This is how you understand your spending habit. What's driving you to want to buy that? And kind of asking them those questions and then helping them make those critical thinking skills on the front end as they start to have their own source of money and being able to make their own choices.
So I would start on the basics. So the simple mechanics of what a budget is, budgeting, what credit and savings, how do you save? Start something with a small, an exercise in saving. What are you saving for? Give them an idea of, well, what do you want to save for? What are you saving towards? What is credit? An explanation of credit. What are you borrowing towards? APR and loans and things like that, that's for a little higher level. That's close to graduation. I think Cole makes an excellent point that if the teacher doesn't understand it, then it's tough to translate into that. And modeling too is if you have an adult who is financed to the hilt, then that may not be a good teaching moment either. But I think providing some real life examples for our kids, letting them understand the true value of money, letting them participate in the budgeting process for something that's going on, whether it's a home trip or a town trip or, you know, a date night, something of that sort where there's real money involved that they have participation in, that gives them a buy-in.
For us, it's something as simple as starting, you know, when we came back as house parents, we'd already had, you know, it's our third go around, I guess you could say. And so we already knew the strength between Rocky and myself. And so we made it very, very clear that Rocky's the banker and I'm the shopper. If it gets to that point. So I think even though that's kind of silly and simple, but our guys learn that even down to a kid that wouldn't talk to Rocky because he was the male of the house. And he had to learn because I wouldn't answer any of his questions about his checkbook because I'm not the banker, you know. So it was that simple of a skill to teach him. But they have to go through him, which then gives Rocky that opportunity to pull out that checkbook, look at all the details, why you do all that. And then when they come to me, then they've got that next step of the process. Okay, where are we going to get this? When are we going to get this? How are we going to do? So it's for us, those skills are super, super basic. You know, sometimes we don't, you know, again, like I said earlier, we don't necessarily get the chance to get into full-fledged budgeting situations. And, you know, one of the things Rocky and I talked about this morning was something as simple as giving the guys, if we decide to all go into town, we give them, hey, you've got this amount of money to buy snacks, but you keep it up with your calculator on your phone because Mrs. Lawless, the shopper, will zap your amount. If you go over this amount, you zap. And so when we first started creating that, they started thinking about that and getting smart and saying, hey, we both like Sprite. So if we get a case of Sprite, it's cheaper for us to buy a case of Sprite, put our money together, we can get more quantity for. So it was something simple and fun for them, but they didn't realize really that they were learning.
Yeah.
But right there, you've already hit about 7 life skills right there, just by one activity.
And they had no clue. I mean, they were just having fun. I get to buy my own snacks.
Yeah.
But you say they have no clue, but later on, they're like, they remember that.
I remember it was cheaper to buy a case than it was to just get 2 or 3. I mean, you know,
that's something that they will take with them.
Right.
And so they will be so much more, they will benefit from that when they are older.
Yeah, and they may not be as apprehensive if they've got a roommate in college, ask a roommate, hey, can we split this? You know, can we, you know, that's a little bit more comfortable for them to, because they know that it works. And they then could train the next person that didn't have that experience, you know.
Whenever something is relevant to yourself and beneficial to something that you need, it's always more meaningful.
Yep.
That's the nature of humans.
Right.
So you guys have already started answering my next question. How do you incorporate real life scenarios and examples into teaching and helping kids understand the practical applications of the life skills that they're learning?
I'll just say, and with our life skills department, this goes hand in hand, but we've got 3 seniors this year. So what we do to go a little deeper with financial abilities and the ways to spend and stuff is to give the seniors a debit card. And so the first time that we sit down together and I pull them individually into the office and say, here's a budget sheet. I know you've seen this with your phone plan and all this, but it was very basic. All we did was write the phone amount that you need, and then boom, that's it. This goes a little deeper. We want to know what you're going to spend with your debit card. So we need to break that down. And so the first time I'll pretty much do it, go over it with them and write everything down. So, okay, now this is what you've told me. This is how it looked. Okay, so next month, I want you to do this, bring it to me. We'll go over it again, but you've done it this time. And then we go from there. So that's just a real simple practice that we do when they turn seniors, that every month they've got to do that. If they don't do it, they don't get anything on their debit card. So it's
they're highly motivated to,
they're
to practice.
And I think the great thing for parents is that they don't have to manufacture or create scenarios for their kids. They have scenarios in their own life that they just have to invite their kids into. And even teenagers want to be part of your life more than you think they do if they're invited in and included. If they can find the sense of belonging in, can you look at how we budget? Can you look at what it's like to buy a car? Can you look at what it's like to do maintenance on your car with me? They're going to have more buy-in than you might think, especially if they don't take your first invitation, if you keep inviting them and they see that it's a serious process, that you actually are invested in them being a part of what's going on in your life and giving them a chance to join it. And the earlier, the better.
So I'm sure you've had kids who are resistant to learning these skills. What are some ways that you've used to get kids engaged or buy into the value of learning these skills?
I think one of the biggest things, the curiosity is really big in understanding the resistance. A lot of resistance can be because they're overwhelmed. A lot of resistance is not to the subject matter, but it's to not wanting to learn it in a group, not wanting to learn it from you, or feeling like you're starting at a level that they don't understand. And so backing up and finding out where the resistance is really important.
I think too, making sure that our kids understand that what we're trying to impart on them is specific to them or has a meaning to what they are trying to achieve, that it's not just a blanket goal that we're trying to impart on them, that it's meaningful to the goal that they have for themselves and what they're hoping to achieve for their success in life. And so when they understand that it's something that we're working on with them and not doing to them,
Exactly.
Then it has a little more meaning. And so usually that has a little more effect in my experience. Mm.
All right, last question. Do you have any resources that you would recommend that our listeners could access for further help in life skills?
Well, I like the Khan Academy and Coursera. I listen to a lot of TED Talk.
Yeah, I think there are so many online life skills video series or other things targeted specifically to teenagers that teach things like recipes, cooking, grocery shopping, and that can parents can use those different ways. You can use it as a guide, watch it yourself and think, oh, I can now model that, or you can watch it with them so y'all could learn something together at the same time.
Well, thank you all for joining us today. I hope you'll come back and join us next week when we start talking about teaching life skills to younger kids. Until then, remember, you might have to loan out your frontal lobes today. Just make sure you remember to get them back.
Thank you for listening to Brain-Based Parenting. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you would like more information about Cal Farley's Boys Ranch, are interested in employment, would like information about placing your child, or would like to help us help children by donating to our mission, please visit calfarley.org. You can find us on all social media platforms by searching for Cal Farley's. Thank you for spending your time with us, and have a blessed day.